as we're all getting weaker every day that we're on this planet, you need to get stronger. So you must do your strength and conditioning for posture, for better gait and turnover, but you must do it to stay strong, because the stronger your muscle contractions, the faster you will run.
This is Running For Real, the podcast for runners who know that for every runner's high, there are just as many lows. All those just missed PRs, easy runs that feel hard, injury blues, and more. Each week, we'll talk to running, health, and wellness experts about their highs, lows, and best advice to build our confidence. Running For Real is about being honest, being brave, and most of all, not feeling alone. And now here's our host, who loves playing kerplunk, Tina Muir.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Running For Real podcast, episode number 101. Thank you so much for being here today. Episode 101. In case you couldn't tell, last week was episode 100th. Yes, the 100th episode of Running For Real. And I know most podcasts go for the massive name drop bomb of a guest, but this is Running For Real and being real with you, my friends. I didn't have that guest to bring on. Well, not one that I could get to agree, who I felt was different to everyone else. And we're told to just be you. So that was for me, just being me, was to share and celebrate with you by allowing one of my closest friends to take over the microphone and be the interviewer, especially as you loved it so much when I had her on in the past. Yes, Sarah Crouch was the host last week. We talked about how far this podcast has come, my win at the Walt Disney World Half Marathon, my book coming out, and just generally we caught up. So it'll be as if you were listening to our conversation. I hope you enjoyed that episode. While I'm on that note, I want to thank you, or thank everyone who is listening who has supported me by purchasing a copy of my book, which is named Overcoming Amenorrhea, Get Your Period Back, Get Your Life Back. It means so much to me, and your shares on social media, especially when you or your kids are in the photo holding the book. Oh my God, it lights my heart on fire. Thank you so, so much. And if you left a positive review as well, well, you're just my favorite forever. One more thing before we get to my guest today. Will you do me a favor and fill out a quick survey? I know, eye roll, surveys are boring. I feel the same way every time Delta emails me asking to rate my experience, but I promise I'm actually doing this for your benefit. I want to figure out what kind of guests you actually want to have on the show and what kind of products and services I could reach out to sponsor this podcast, so you hear from companies and things you actually like and want to hear from. I don't want to assume I know you too well, but I want to hear it from you. What do you like? It won't take long, but it'll make both of our lives better, and it'll make this a much more enjoyable experience for you. So hopefully that helps you as well. You can help me out by going to the show notes and clicking on the link, or by visiting tinamuir.com/survey. Oh, and one more thing. Sorry, this is just a run-on of connector stuff here. I mentioned my show notes, and I've been meaning to mention to you for a while that I've actually brought on this amazing writer named Jacob to write a summary about what each episode is about. He's going to give you the most important points that the guest brought up, but also the takeaways you can take with you into your running journey as you move forward. We all have that friend who refuses to listen to podcasts. Well, now you can send them this with basically everything that you learned and you loved listening to it in audio format. They can just read about it. He's doing a fantastic job, so be sure to check them out. Today's episode, for example, is at tinamuir.com/episode101. Now that's the housekeeping out of the way, onto today's guest. Today, I have one of my all-time favorite coaches and one amazing human being on the show. He's one of my mentors, and if I was to ask anyone for advice on my training, other than my husband, obviously, I would go to him. And actually, Steve and I have collectively asked him for advice in the past and then implemented it, as Steve also sees how good he is at what he does. Nick Anderson is a very well-known coach in the UK and has coached thousands from every level. And I'm always so impressed with just how much his athletes improve whenever I talk to him. And when I talk to Nick before I race, I always am left feeling so ready to go, and I just believe in myself in this whole new way. It's amazing. Now, this episode is marathon focused, but I think you can learn a lot even if you're not training for a marathon, as the principles can be applied to other distances too. So just a reminder, go get my book if you so desire. And also please go fill out the survey at tinamuir.com/survey. All right, let's go meet Nick. Nick Anderson, I am so honoured, so excited to have you on this podcast. Show my amazing audience just how wonderful you are, how much you mean to me. So thank you so much for being here today.
Tina, it's a real honour. Thank you for inviting me. And it's lovely to hear from you.
Do you actually ever listen to podcasts? Be honest.
Yes, I do.
You do?
I do. I actually have got really into them. I'm always driving around to deliver training nights and coming back from late night workshops and whatever. So I tend to listen to them more than music now. It's pretty cool.
I'm the same way. Yeah, I like anything as well. And I always tell people if you need to get into podcasts, it doesn't even have to be about running or something else. Like you could type knitting into the search bar and I'm sure there's a podcast that would come up or whatever it is you're interested in. So that's good to know. But for the listeners, you know, I've known you a long time. I'm thinking maybe 15 plus years. Nick is one of the main mentors in my running life. And to be fully honest, I've told Nick this before. If Steve wasn't my coach, if he would have me, Nick would be my coach because that's how much I respect, value, just love Nick to death. So I'm really excited for you guys to learn from him. He also doesn't just work with elite. He's worked with athletes of every level. He's one of Europe's most respected coaches. He's one of the Great Britain coaches, one of the England coaches, and has a great business running with us, which he does with Tom Craggs. And there's one other woman. I can't remember what her name is.
Yeah, no. So actually it's Siobhan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Roots, and actually we've got a nutritionist now.
Oh,
and
cool.
So Alex Cook, and yeah, we're busy.
Yeah,
busy.
Fun. So you have a lot of hats, but you know, one that I know people will be interested in is being a Great Britain coach, recently taking a team to the World Half Marathon Championships. And I said to you off air that I was kind of annoyed at you for not doing it the year I was there, because I would have, you know, not that I didn't like the guy who was doing it, but I would have just loved that. That would have just made it even more special for me. So tell us, what does that involve? Because people maybe in their head are thinking, okay, well, if you're the British coach, does that mean you coach everyone who's on the team? What does that involve?
Yeah, no. Well, far from coaching everyone in the team, it's always an honour to be asked to do it. I've been very fortunate over the years that I've taken teams to the World Cross, to the World Road Running Championships and to other events. And I think I've done the World Road or the World Half now 3 out of the last 4 years. So you were unlucky, Tina. I'm sorry about that. It was just the year I didn't do it.
But did you do that on purpose? You're like, oh no, don't want that one.
No, do you know what it was? It was in Cardiff, wasn't it, that you did it? So it was in the UK.
Nasty weather year. Yes.
Yeah, it was. It was a tough one. So I think there was a lot of people available. And if I'm really honest, I think it also clashed with me being away coaching and warm weather training and things like that. So I was trying to do two things at the same time, but just got back for the race, but wasn't available really to look after the team. But in answer to your question, the thing really with being a team coach for something like a Team GB event is you're there to be there for the athletes, to help them maybe in their final bits of prep or to help them on race with anything they need, and just to be eyes and ears really. They're normally very experienced athletes, and of course they've all got their own personal coaches. And I always say it's really for me trying to make sure that they can either speak to or be with or communicate with their own personal coach, and you're facilitating that in amongst the chaos of what is a big event with, you know, teams everywhere, drug testing going on, local organizing committees making various rules that have all got to be adhered to, call up zones, time zones, all of that that's going on. So you're just trying to make the athlete's life really smooth, but also just be there just in case they need to communicate about something and their own coach isn't available. Mm-hmm. To give some guidance.
Yeah, and I can say, as much as I can't remember his name, which is really bad, that the endurance coach we did have that year was really helpful. And I it does make you feel a lot more relaxed knowing that there's someone who can kind of take care of things for you. So I appreciate you, and I know the other athletes do. And you also work with the England team as the head marathon coach. So tell us about what that aspect involves.
Yeah, so we've got a project under the way really to try and raise standards at the performance end for England athletics with the marathon. So we identified that the Commonwealth Games standards, really we didn't have enough athletes inside those standards for the marathon. So there's a small amount of funding, and we've been able to put together a project which is basically the England Marathon Programme. It's kind of like the England Marathon squad. So if you're inside certain times, you come along, you're eligible to be involved. We've got a weekend this weekend, which we're really excited about, when it doesn't snow too much. And, you know, the athletes come along, and I've got a series of talks in place, some great training sessions. We've had the likes of Dr. Andy Jones, who was obviously the physiologist for the Breaking 2 project. He was there last year for a weekend. Dr. Charlie Pedler. We've got some great physios and strength and conditioning guys involved this time. Tracy Barlow's been involved. Mario Mucci's been involved. So it's great. Bubble Dare helps me a little bit with it. And of course, Bud ran the UK marathon squads with me, helping him years ago when I was looking after the 5K, 10K. So we're kind of revisiting some sort of territory that we know works, really. It's good.
No, I love that. And so this is, so for people who fall inside the standard, which was, I believe, for women, 231, was that right?
Right. So, right. And this is, so 231 would be a world championship or an Olympic qualifying time, probably also actually set more so by British athletics. Mm-hmm. This is looking at that tier below and really looking at people like yourselves when you were at the beginning of your journey and saying, right, how are you going to get from being a very good club runner to running internationally and then getting a Commonwealth Games standard.
So this is younger athletes. This isn't
not necessarily younger. Okay. No, in fact, because it's the marathon, it's not younger. It's we've got a complete mix of, you know, 20 somethings, 30 somethings, even into early 40s. The key here is that you still want to improve and you've run. So for women, it sounds soft, but it's really not. It's to make it inclusive and to broaden the base of the pyramid. And so we've gone for sub 255 and for men sub 230 or sub 228 actually. So that actually means that there's up to 100 people already inside that range, but it's what we want to do with that 100 and also get more than 100 inside that time that's important. So we're really looking to raise standards, and that's where your Tracy Barlow's, Tina Muir's, I think, come from to make those teams.
And so the people that are invited, and I just want to mention, a lot of my listeners will be thinking 255, like, that's not soft, that's like something I would never dream of. But you know, this is obviously thinking of people who could be potential Olympic hopefuls. So those people are invited to these events. This is just kind of like a learning event to kind of really get down some information and kind of understand areas of running that they might kind of struggle with.
Yeah. And do you know what? A lot of the stuff we're doing is exactly what your listeners would need to do. I run a lot training days here in the UK for people looking to do their first ever London marathon or first ever marathon event. And some of the things we're talking about on those days aren't a million miles from what we're talking about on these performance weekends. Because the principles are often the same. It's just that the faster athletes probably are doing more of it. And they've probably got to focus on certain areas regarding recovery and nutrition in a slightly different way and strength and conditioning. But the basics are still the same. And, you know, we're looking at making sure the right types of recovery running economy work. The long runs are still being structured correctly and that the athlete knows how to look after themselves.
Yeah. Well, and I want to dive in more to general marathon stuff in just a minute, because I think a lot of people can learn a lot from you. And you were the one that Steve and I went to, I don't know, probably 5 years ago after my first two marathons. I really struggled. And you kind of looked at my long runs and you said, you need to make some changes here. And Steve and I implemented those changes. But before we get onto that, I just want to mention, you mentioned 255 there. And you had been working with Tracy Barlow, who I believe her PR is 231.
230 230.
So, but what did she start off at? Because I think this is really interesting to hear.
Well, before she was with me, Tracy was running marathons for fun, for charities. So we got some great pictures here of her running around, waving at the crowd, having a great day out. She was still actually, I mean, she's still running very respectable times, but she was running closer to 4 hours. Which I'm 4 hours is really respectable. You know, anybody who does a marathon, you know, hats off to you. Well done. Whether you're walk running it, you're running it to complete the distance, or you've got a target time. But she was running just inside 4 hours and just really enjoying herself. I think there was a party side to her. She was probably running a few times a week. And she got that down really by joining a club and got down to around about 3 hours and was just enjoying what the club had to offer. But I actually watched her run a cross-country race, and we got chatting through a mutual friend. And I just sort of listened to what she was doing. We met for coffee and the progression happened. So we went all our way to, you know, 240, 238. I'm trying to think how this panned out. 233, 232, 231, 230. So it just keeps coming down. Yeah.
In the usual Nick Anderson progression, which I see with almost all of your athletes. And I love to see that. And if I say almost all, because the ones that aren't are still in that progression, so it's working through. So I love to see it, and that's why I wanted to bring you on to have people learn from you, as you are just so knowledgeable, and you have coached a lot of marathoners. So just to give you a very general question to start off with, what is the biggest mistake that you see marathoners in general make within their training or in the racing, if that's more applicable?
I'd probably ask if I could have two bites at that. So for the marathon runner, I think the first one, actually, although we did speak about your long runs because they were really important because you'd moved up from shorter distances, and I felt there were things we could be clever with. I think actually most marathon runners, if you're somebody running three times a week, you're doing a bit of cross training, and you know you want to run 4, 5, 6 hours for the marathon and have a great time, don't put too much emphasis on just your long run. The long run is a component, but it's not the only thing. And you know, what you do in those other two runs in a week will probably have as big an impact if you do them correctly as the long run itself. So I'm thinking there about making sure you do some threshold running and understand.
What does that mean for someone listening?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's different definitions, but for me, if you can imimagine that everyone is 0 to 100% as a human being, and so everything up to about 85%, very crudely speaking, because we all vary, is working aerobically with oxygen. Once you're working above 85%, that kind of feeling that you're in the last kilometer of a hard 5K or the last couple of kilometers of a hard 10K when you're really out of breath, that's not working with oxygen. That's starting to work more anaerobically. So that's above 85%. Now, the marathon, for somebody who's very new to the sport, is probably run at about 60 to 70% of your maximum heart rate or that aerobic area. So if we can find the sweet spot of about, say, 75 to about 85%, of your maximum heart rate or your perceived effort. So 3 or 4 word answer pace, controlled discomfort, as I always call it. So 3 or 4 words, not a full sentence. That's probably your threshold running rough area. And if you were to do some running each week and put blocks of that work in, we see a massive change over time in your stroke volume of your heart, the strength of the heart. And actually that will give you the endurance for your long runs to feel easier. And actually I'm convinced that gives you the last 10 miles of the marathon as well as your long run.
I would agree with that. Yep. And that's definitely what something Steve has in there. And so if this is kind of what we were doing within my workouts when I was training for marathons, that would be kind of slightly below what your anticipated kind of race pace or goal pace is. So slightly faster.
Yeah. So there's different ways of doing this. And I think this is where it can get very scientific. For somebody who's running three times a week and wants to know a little bit about the sport, but, you know, doesn't want to get obsessed with sport science, if they're going out and doing a 45, 60 minute run each week with some blocks of this work in, whether it's 5 minute blocks, 6 minute blocks, 10 minute blocks, and a number of them, if it's 3 or 4 word answer pace, controlled discomfort, that actually will hit this nail on the head in a good enough way to see good progression. For the likes of yourself, you would need to do some running, at different, what we would call lactate levels and different areas of that physiological curve. And for you, you'd actually want to be a little bit slower than threshold sometimes, around about 2 millimoles, because that's probably the pace you're going to run your marathon at if you're in good shape. And you even want to get more economical running slightly slower than that, because then you learn to teach your body to run more off stored fats as well and to become efficient. So the third run I would say to your listeners who only run a few times a week that I would really get them to do is to try and run at least once a week before breakfast really easily.
Oh, you really do think that makes a big difference? Okay.
Yeah, I pick it up. I think if you go out and run slowly before breakfast once a week, half an hour, 45, 60 minutes, if that's your third unit of running and you're doing a good long run and some good threshold work, actually you're stimulating an energy system there by running slowly that will mean your body gets used to working more with stored fats. So you protect your carbohydrate in the race on the big day. So you're less likely to hit the wall. You're actually in those slow runs getting more red blood cell adaptation and capillarization in the muscles. So your body gets better at working with oxygen. So, you know, actually learning to run slowly is a very clever way of becoming eventually a better marathon runner as well. Don't always assume it's working hard.
Yep. Nope. Absolutely agree. Thank you for explaining that, because I'm constantly trying to make people see that how important that is. And when it comes to that, you know, threshold day, the workout day of the week, you know, for most people, firstly, let's go into this. A lot of marathon runners that I talk to, and we're talking, let's say, average 3 to 4 hour marathoners, or 3 to 5 maybe, will want to do 2, you know, hard days a week plus a long run. Your experience, is that too much, or can people, some people get away with that? What I never found I could only ever do 1 plus a long run.
Well, actually, it kind of, because the previous question, I said there were 2 points, and the second point was doing too much, too far, too soon, too often is the other mistake I see marathon runners make, which actually then comes exactly into the point you've just raised. And that is that I think, you know, some elite athletes don't realize how tired they are. The long run is a big component. It's the equivalent of doing your hardest, if not harder than your hardest interval or workout of the week. So when you're doing marathon work and you're doing big volume of miles, if you're, you know, a pretty serious runner, then I actually think you've probably only got room in your energy sort of week. Look at it as energy rather than days. You've probably only got room for 1 or 2 other good workouts in the week. So you, if you do a long run on a Sunday, you might do a good workout Tuesday and Friday or something like that. But, you know, sometimes I see that moving to a good long run and then something midweek that's a good running economy sort of longish session. And then maybe you won't do another hard unit until you do your next good long run again, particularly if that long run's a progression run or it's got some marathon pace built into it. So it depends where you are in your training cycle. And also, I think the biggest thing in the sport now, over the last 20 years, that's changed, because when I was chatting to you years ago, I don't think training's changed that much in all the years that we've known each other. But what I think's changed is our ability to recover better and understand how to track recovery. So, you know, have a little look at how well you're recovering day to day. And what is the point in doing a really hard workout when you're already tired? So wait until the body's recovered, then go and do the really good workout. And sometimes that means actually you drop one of your hard days in marathon prep because the long run is so tough. And actually you just give yourself more time in a week to recover before you do your next hard session.
Yeah, I think that's good that you mentioned that, and it gives people kind of an option to really assess themselves. Although something that came up when you just said that, well, 2 things. One, my conversation with Steve Magnus a few weeks ago, who I'm sure you've heard of.
Fantastic.
Talked about I'm gonna hack this quote, but it was something like, we've replaced in our culture, we've replaced smart work at the expense of hard work, or something, basically saying we feel like hard work is more important than doing it, kind of doing the right thing. And it kind of reminded me of what you said there. And secondly, I was reading something about Mo Farah. I can't remember if it was either Gary or Gary, Paula Radcliffe's husband, who is coaching him now, or if it was Alberto Salazar, but someone, I remember reading that he believes about running on tiredness all the time for marathons. Like, he does his recovery runs at like 5:30 per mile pace or something like that. That seems to be a kind of against what you have said, and also what I've learned as well.
I think there's everyone's got their own interpretation of this. Salazar is renowned as a very tough athlete and a tough man, you know, with his coaching and training as well. So, you know, you have to decide. But also, if your recovery strategies and the support vehicle you've got behind you is so good, it enables you to recover well, then you probably could afford to run a bit faster in some of your recovery runs. So, you know, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, that one. I personally think a lot of runners, their mistake they make is they do a lot of their running on the days between the hard sessions and the long sessions. They run a little bit too hard sometimes.
Yeah, I agree.
So we never see the true recovery we want. We never see the regeneration process. I think a lot of athletes, if they focus a bit more on getting the quality of their sleep better, the minor tweaks in their nutrition and the snacking and grazing, and some other clever things you can do with recovery, you'd probably actually see a better swing in fitness than you would from then trying to ever beast themselves for an extra session. So recover, I always say to people, make sure you're recovering first of all from the training you're actually doing before you actually look to progress anything.
That's so true.
And I think what Steve Magnus has said, which I mean, I'm a fan of what he says. I think he's a very clever and well-read, you know, guy who puts it across very well. I agree what he said there. Training smart has to make more sense than just whacking yourself. I mean, anyone can go and put their foot hard to the ground.
Yeah.
But where does that really get you? You know, we're animals and there's some physiology here. You want to be clever and play in certain training zones that relate to the end goal you're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. I could not agree more. Thank you for explaining that. And then one more question about workouts before we get on to other questions here. Is there a specific with if someone is going to do once a week, you know, they have kids, they have a family, that's all they can really handle is one extra hard day a week. Is there a certain amount of miles or kilometers someone should be getting on that day? Like, should that be kind of a high volume day as well as kind of some intensity in there? Because I know with the training program Steve and I have put out, and we've got many people listening who use it, we make that second day a very high volume day. Like you have about a 3 mile warm up, a 3 mile cool down, plus, you know, the duration of the workout. It makes it quite a long day. And people always say, oh, you know, do I have to make it that long? But Steve believes that is kind of practicing for the marathon, running on tired legs, making it a second, really kind of getting your bang for your buck, essentially. So what are your thoughts on that with kind of volume on that workout day?
I think when you're in pure marathon preparation, you're probably into that final 10, 12 weeks. It's quite interesting. I do a lot of work with a guy called Charlie Pedler. Mm-hmm. And Charlie's a very good physiologist. And I still think you've got at the highest level, when you're a performing athlete, say at the level you're at, you've got to stimulate the VO2 system still, this you know, maximum oxygen uptake area. So more 3K, 5K pace type workouts. For your listeners. But you need to do that sparingly. And it's probably something you'll do once every 2 weeks, once every 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big sort of midweek or big midweek workout you're on about, they exist. I think you can only do so many of them before you become too tired within the training cycle as well from them.
Okay.
But I'm thinking here of workouts that you might do a 90 minute or an hour and 40 minute midweek workout. And you might, for the middle 60 minutes, do 3 minutes at threshold, 3 minutes steady, alternating between the two. That's quite a big workout for a lot of people that, you know, aren't pro athletes. Whereas a pro athlete will do a different variation of that. They might do 20K continuous built into the middle of their midweek workout, but they'll flip it between marathon pace and threshold work. They might put the odd easier K in there as well to float as well. Mm-hmm. So there's all different things that you could do in that midweek workout. One of my favorite sort of things is I get people to do things like 5K at their planned marathon pace, 5 times a kilometer at, say, 10K effort, and then 5K again at the end marathon pace. And there'd be short recoveries between all of that. And really that last 5K at marathon pace is done on tired legs. You've used up quite a bit of your carbohydrate, but you've been trying to take some stuff on during the session. And it's just teaching your body to run and feel what it's like to be in that final half of the marathon, not in the first half of the marathon, which is the easy part. All right. Because I always think you're always preparing the athlete to understand their body and be better in the second half of a marathon. So you try and recreate sessions that sort of emulate that without creating the same level of fatigue that actually running the marathon would ever create.
Yep. Okay, cool. Thank you for explaining.
Yeah, so those midweek workouts are important, but I also, I like to sometimes cut it back.
Okay.
I say once every few weeks, once every 3 or 4 weeks, we do some short turnover stuff. So you might do a load of 400s just to keep the athlete's legs turning over. If all you're running when you're training for a marathon is slow, there's a danger you start to feel slow, even though you're not. So it's really good just to keep in touch with a bit of speed, endurance and turnover.
Okay, great. Thank you for explaining. Now, you just mentioned there that you, the second half of the marathon is essentially at the 20-mile mark. Now, I'm sure you hear this over and over. I do too. When people say, my legs cramped at 20 miles, always assuming it's electrolytes, that I don't have enough electrolytes. But tell us, you know, it's okay, sometimes it may be you're out of electrolytes, but in other cases, what does this show? And, you know, what can someone do if this keeps happening to them?
Well, I mean, the electrolytes is important. I would check, you know, if you've got those white powder marks on your clothes, then, you know, if it's a case of you not doing the rinse cycle properly on your washing machine, then go and rinse your clothes properly. But if it's genuinely that, you know, you are one of those people that sweats a lot of salt, then you do need to look at that, because that will cause you problems in the last 10 miles of marathon. Away from that, if you're struggling with, I wouldn't say it's as severe a cramp as you get when you're struggling with electrolytes, but if you're just getting a real tiredness and fatigue and that kind of almost cramping type feeling in working, you know, legs, quads, hamstrings, whatever, I think first of all, look at your strength and conditioning. You know, I really believe that all runners should be strong. So you should be doing your strength and conditioning work. You've got to be strong enough to hang the training off the skeleton. So be strong. Please, as well, have a little look at other types of things you can do in training. You know, are you strong enough from the type of running you're doing? You know, are you getting out there running enough rolling hills? Are there enough periods of the year where you're doing some specific hill training as well for either turnover or strength and
power? If it's a hilly course or regardless?
Well, no, if it's a hilly course, then you need to be used to some undulating running. Don't just run on the flat. But I think you've got to look at, you know, as a lot of your listeners will not be younger, and all of us, as we get older, get weak. All right. So as we're all getting weaker every day that we're on this planet, you need to push back the tide and you've got to get stronger. So you must do your strength and conditioning for posture, for better gait and turnover, but you must do it to stay strong, because the stronger your muscle contractions, the faster you will run. So get the strength work in. Otherwise, your muscles are getting weaker and you will slow down because you're just not strong enough. Do the hill work. And do it in phases of the year. And just within all of that, providing your nutrition is good, that I can't see, if the pace was right, why you would be struggling with muscles cramping in the last 10 miles.
I think that's what I'm kind of getting to, pace, maybe going at a pace that isn't realistic.
Well, that's not going to work for anyone in the marathon. It doesn't matter who you think you are. If your pace is unrealistic in the first half, you're going to get found out in the second half of the marathon, because you can't blag it. No. You know, you can't hang on and just lose 30 seconds like you might do in a 10K or a 5K. In the marathon, you're going to get found out big time. So your pace has to be realistic and all the training elements have got to be correct. But once you've looked at all the sorts, were you actually doing enough strength work to remain strong enough for the whole? If you look at Paula Radcliffe's career and you look at the amount of strength and conditioning work she did throughout her career, and then you look at her first mile, I always say, in the marathon when she ran 2:15. And then you look at the last mile when she ran 2:15. She looks exactly the same. She looks like she's racing a 5K.
Except for her head.
Yeah, forget the head. just forget. Think about everything elsewhere. Yeah. and just the posture, you know, how high her hips are, how well she's running. Now, she did a lot of conditioning work, a lot of strength work, ran a lot of hills incidentally in training. Throughout all of her years of running and running at high volume. So she was always supremely conditioned. Mm-hmm. There's no fluke there.
Yeah. And so you're talking about for, you know, every runner across the board, it doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete going for a world record or, you know, someone trying to break a 5-hour marathon. If you're someone that does find this keeps happening, look into getting some strength training, getting a coach, working with someone who's going to work on those areas. And I have brought this up multiple times. You know, my listeners know that I do have a strength training program with my coach, Drew. But just from your perspective, having worked with all these athletes over the years, for runners who fear, I don't want to get big by doing strength training, what would you say?
You won't get big. Unless, look, if you're a guy that's training for a marathon, but you're living on protein and lifting really heavy weights, you're probably going to bulk up a bit. Mm-hmm. That's obvious. But that's actually because you've chosen a stimulus, which is to lift really heavy weights. So you're working on power and then you're just living on protein, which is going to allow a little bit of growth. If you're doing a lot of running, and your weight training is based around more strength, endurance, as well as strength work, whether you're male or female, you're not going to be lifting the right type of weights to bulk up, I don't think, in that way. Mm-hmm. But if you are one of those guys that you know, and when I say guys, I mean men or women here, that does bulk up a bit, I'm saying to you, be strong. But that actually can be your core work and be your body weight exercises. It can be technique work and still lifting and activation work.
What would some examples of some of the, not obviously the core and the general strength stuff, but you said about activation work, what would be some examples of that?
I think most people, that's wrong, that's unfair. A lot of people don't activate their glutes correctly mm-hmm. when they run, and they're not firing them when they actually go and train. So, you know, are they really activating their glutes when they're doing one leg squats? Are they really switching that on? So go and speak to your trainer, speak to the person in the gym, and actually your physio, and actually see if you really are switching on that area. Mm-hmm. Because the stability factor, the strength factor, the ability to repeat the same foot plant over and over again without losing power and sort of linear movement in a marathon is huge. And the glutes play a major part of that. So go and make sure that you're actually activating the right muscles when you're doing this training. Mm-hmm. You're not just in there just going through some lifting, but it's not having much effect on your running. So it's got to be specific to the running you're doing.
Exactly. Really, I always joke when I talk about my work with Drew and how just life-changing it was to start working with a strength coach. I always joke, or Steve likes to joke, that I used to kind of lift 5-pound dumbbells while watching the TV while squatting at the same time. Like, that was my strength training. And we just kind of laugh about it now, because that's what I was quite smug at the time, thinking, well, I'm doing the strength training, but really that was, doing nothing for me.
It's really easy. I mean, there's so many great classes out there, but the danger is you'll go to a body pump type class, and you'll lift weights in the class, and you'll come out, you'll be sweating, you've done a workout, you feel good. But actually, have you really activated the muscle groups you want in the right mm-hmm. way to be a better runner? You probably haven't. So I would go and pay for some sessions with a PT or a physical trainer that really understands weights for a runner, but also understands biomechanics and body posture and what your body's going to go through as a runner. And you'll never look back from that, because mm-hmm. the program you have, even if you just stick with that, it will make you a stronger
Absolutely.
And better runner when you run. So I would really spend a little bit of money on that one.
Yep. Oh, great. Thank you for explaining that. And that wasn't kind of where I was expecting you to go, so that was helpful. All right, let's talk about long runs. You've mentioned those. They are not the most important component, but are important. Share some of the different types of long runs. You did tell me this years ago, but for someone listening who thinks, every week, it doesn't have to be every week is a 20-mile, 22, 24-mile long run. What does long run need to be?
Well, I don't think there's a hard and fast rule. I think over the years you learn to find out what works for you. And there are we are dealing with different athletes here. Some athletes, I work with athletes, if we're talking about the marathon, I work with athletes who I feel are natural marathon runners. I feel sometimes I work with athletes who've moved up from 5K, 10K, shorter distances, and we've got to do a lot of work to make sure they're still going to be strong, but always very vulnerable in the second half of a marathon. And some coaches will know what I mean by that. You've got your what I call out and out marathon runners, and then you've got your kind of rockets that you're just trying to get ready to but hoping they can hang on and still be there at the end. And the thing with a long run is I think in the early stages of training, and a lot of your listeners who are new to running will try and run their long runs actually too fast. And just see it as time on feet, see it as fully conversational, and just let the body adapt. And you build your long run by, people have said, 10, 15 minutes a week or whatever. That's great. It works. And by doing that, we see, really good things happening to the mitochondria, capillarization, and just your ability to work with oxygen. It increases your endurance, and it's good for time on feet and confidence. Mm-hmm. But there will come a point, even for someone who's not, I say, a real serious marathon runner, someone who's running their first marathon, I think the last 10 weeks of your marathon build, the long runs become more important. I think if you can get to, this is for your new runners, if you can get to a point where you're sort of 2 hours, 10 weeks, 12 weeks before the marathon, you're in a great place. If you're still building to that, that's fine. There's still time. Don't worry. But for your, you know, for your newer runners, last 10, 12 weeks, you want to start to now build the long run from 2 hours, but you're going to really focus on putting some more marathon paced work in there sometimes. Or if you don't know what your marathon pace is, you're at least going to sometimes make sure the second half of the run is slightly quicker than the first half. Mm-hmm. Put blocks of slightly quicker work in. Because ultimately you're trying to get the body ready to be strong in the second half of the marathon. Now, for the experienced runners, those that have run them before or come from a long running background, very competitive, of course, in that last 10, 12 weeks, we're starting to increase volumes of the long run even more. We're starting to really target our planned race paces. Mm-hmm. We're starting to do long progression runs. And those long progression runs could be 30, 35K, you know, even longer, 38K, whatever. I mean, Kipchoge's rumored to go further than that. Mm-hmm. So you'll do whatever you can recover from, but you're going to start to really put in clever things into your long runs so that they're not just 20 miles or 2.5 hours time on feet. Mm-hmm. Okay. Your body's now fit enough to do better in that final 10, 12 weeks. But again, don't do it every week. So every third or fourth week, bring that long run right back, have an easy week.
That's what I wanted you to, I'm glad you mentioned that. So with that, how low are you talking? Because this was a complete right. eye-opener for Steve and I. We didn't know this before we talked to you. Like, well, how low trouble. Are you talking yeah. of going?
And a lot of people, you know, train with apps and they follow algorithms, but the human body is not an algorithm. It's not an app. And I always say that, and I use this story, if you're going to go and climb Mount Everest, what you'll do, if you're going to get it right, is you'll go to base camp and you'll spend a number of weeks at base camp acclimatizing to the thin air, where basically your body internally now has blood cells that can cope with the thin air. So there's more red blood cells taking on more oxygen, and the hemoglobin is different, and you're able now to cope with the thin air because you've been there for a number of weeks. That's actually the same as your base period of training for a marathon or for a longer event. Okay, you've built your aerobic base. Then you want to go up a couple of camps. You go probably to camp one, camp two. You go up, you spend a little bit of time there, but then actually you come back down. So that's your first period of training in the last 10, 12 weeks, then you come back down and have your easy week. So the mountaineer comes back to base camp, acclimatizes a bit, recovers, then they go up to camp three or four. So now you increase your running training again, you go up the mountain and you increase your training further. The runs become a bit harder or a bit further, more marathon pace, whatever. But then you'll probably come back down again before you go back up, but you won't come down as far in okay. that cutback this time, because you'll probably come, the mountaineer will come down a couple of camps, acclimatize a bit more before they're maybe going up and trying to summit. So if you look at yourself as more as a mountaineer, you're trying to go up in stages, but each time you do that stage, you come back down a bit to recover before you go on to the next stage. And that recovery week, that cutback week, is crucial for regeneration, allowing the body to adapt, because you get fitter through adapting. Mm-hmm. You don't get fitter through just doing more training.
Yeah. And so I know you said it obviously depends. It's going to be a little bit less the second time. Are we talking, you know, for someone listening, if let's say their long run is 18 to 20 miles, you come down yeah. to 10? Do you come down to 15?
Yeah, you might come down to 10, 12, 13, 14, 15.
Okay. Probably so a drastic 15. Drop.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the danger is if you do more than 15, you're going to go too close to what you've been doing before and you won't properly recover. Okay. What you want is for the next long run you do to be at least where you were before or further. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at just building volume, but it may be that the next one's the one you do the same volume that you did before, but now you're putting a chunk of
yes.
quality work in there okay. as well.
Okay.
So the body's moved on.
All right. That's helpful. Thank you, Nick. All right. And finally, just the final area I want to ask you about, the race itself. Pacing is a difficult thing, especially for newer runners, but even experienced runners, this is something people struggle with year after year. Firstly, your thoughts on pace groups, if that is a good idea. And secondly, if they don't want to go the pace group route, what would be an alternative, or how can they learn to pace themselves?
Well, I mean, the great Greta Weitz didn't coin that phrase, didn't she? The marathon begins at 20 miles, everything else is transport. And that will always be true. So I guess for the newer runner, I I think if you've been training for 5 hours, 4.5 hours, 4 hours, whatever it is, and you've done some stuff in training that shows that you're ready to do that, you've maybe done a half marathon, and when you double that half marathon and then add 10 to 20 minutes, it comes out at that rough marathon pace, then yeah, go with the pace group. If you enjoy running with people, it's a great way to chat, not push too hard. Most paces will be spot on and pretty even pace, and it's even pace that will be important to you. Mm-hmm. Or even being a little bit soft early on and then settling into even pace. So, you know, whatever you do, I always say to people, go out slightly soft.
So rather than if there was a pacer in front who was just a little bit ahead of what you thought you were capable of, it'd be better to go back one?
Oh, because you're really pushing here. You see, the difficulty with that is if you're in a group and you're slipstreaming and, you know, you're getting pulled along by the crowd, there might be a reason to just, if there was only a few seconds in this, go with the group ahead. But I think a lot of the time, if that group ahead is going to push you a little bit too quick, a little bit quicker than you've been training, and a little bit faster than you've been used to working out, you're going to burn energy too quickly, and you're just, there's a big chance you're going to struggle in the last 10 miles at some point. So first 5K, I think, is really a case of easing into the race and finding your pace. To a point, no matter who you are, it's just getting settled. Then there's probably the middle 20 odd K of the race is about being really patient, getting your fueling right, and really, really now making sure you're definitely not running faster than you plan to run or trained at in the marathon. Mm-hmm. And then really the marathon, if the marathon begins at sort of 30 K, 20 miles, but now you've arrived at that point, hopefully with some energy in the tank, and that's where you go to work. So, you know, if you're going to run a sensible race, whatever you do, it's a strategy up to that point. And then you're in a foot race, mm-hmm. to a point, but everything's still gradual. Maybe you're going to chase the vest in front gradually, then the next one gradually. You know, a lot of our charity runners and people running for the first time, I always say dedicate each one of the last 6 to 10 miles to someone special to you. Yeah. Get through it that way. For the pro, it's really a case of locking into the target and being in the race. And now you've got to concentrate on all those runs you've done, believing in yourself and racing the people rather than up to 30K, you're racing the distance or respecting it.
I love that. Yeah, that's so true. And I remember so clearly the first year I broke 2:40 in the marathon, and I talked to you the day before and you pretty much told me a lot of that. And I remember passing you at 20 miles and you were like, make sure when you pass me, you feel good. And you always tend to hang out right around that 20 mile mark.
Yeah, and that's where it happens. 20 miles is where the marathon starts.
I remember going past you and being like, yes, Nick, I did it. Like, I do feel good. So, it's kind of cool that's where you like to go as well.
And do you know what, as a coach, I can 9 times out of 10 tell you what's going to happen to that athlete when they pass you at 20 miles. Mm-hmm. You know, when they've slightly overcooked it, and you know when they want a good one.
I think I passed 94 people in that final 6 miles that day.
Wow.
Like, yeah. I was like on a roll, but, you know, most of them were men, obviously.
And do you know what? Your listeners can all do the same.
Yeah.
And you know, people just go off too hard. They can't help themselves. And they always say to you, I felt fantastic from 10K to halfway. Well, of course they did, because you haven't run anywhere yet. Mm-hmm. Race hasn't even begun.
Yep, so true. All right, Nick, I've just got to take a moment to thank our sponsor, and then we'll be back with the Running For Real 4. No ad today, my friends. Instead, I wanted to ask you if you would do me a huge favor. In 2019, I'm working hard to bring you the things that are actually helpful for you, brands you actually want to hear from and learn from. And the best way that I can do that is to actually hear it from you. I'm not saying that the brands in the past haven't matched up. You know that that's something that's really important to me. I'm just saying I want to think about you moving forward. I've actually not conducted a podcast survey in years, and I thought it was about time. I want to get to know you better, and if you would like to be in a focus group with me, we can talk about it even more than this survey too. I'd really appreciate it if you could go to tinamuir.com/survey to fill it out and help me out. It won't take long, just a few minutes, but it will make this podcast more enjoyable for you in the future. Oh, and I know I said no ad, but just a reminder in case you forgot, because if you are like me listening to this while you run or do something else, because hello, multitasking, you may have forgotten, like I often do, about things that you need to remind yourself to do. Anyway, my book, Overcoming Amenorrhea, is now out, and I'd love your support if you could purchase a copy. And you can get yourself a copy by visiting tinamuir.com/book. And for all these links I mentioned, because remember, your hands are busy, you're doing something, be sure to go visit the show notes at tinamuir.com/episode101. Easy to remember. Thanks so much, my friends. All right, Nick, just four more short questions for you, starting with one piece of advice for life.
Smile and enjoy it. God, that's a bit cheesy, isn't it? I'm sorry, but okay. I think it goes very quickly. I can't believe I'm 49 this year. And if you enjoy what you're doing, I think you'll be better at it.
I love that. I love that so much. And do you know, I can't remember exactly what you said, but the first time I really got to know you was in Algarve when I went with you to one of your training camps with India Lee.
Mentioning the fact you're on one of the young athlete camps at the age of about 14 or 15 here.
I think that was later, actually. And do you, Nick, do you know something really funny? My dad lost a lot of weight last year. He wears my young athlete camp t-shirt. I'm not kidding. Every single week. And I'm like, why are you wearing that? That's my shirt.
Your family still got that. It's about 20 years old.
It says 2004 on it. And it says Adidas young athlete. And he wears it all the time. And I think it's like a pride thing that he lost all this weight, but like, it just makes me laugh every time. I'm like, Dad, that was my shirt. I don't know why I have a men's medium shirt, but apparently I do. So, I know I did get to know you that, but I'm pretty sure that was after Algarve. I think that was my final year at school. I don't know. Maybe not. Actually, probably. I can't remember. I went to a few with you, but anyway, I remember you doing a hill run one day and I was taking it so seriously, like trying to impress you. And I remember you just saying like, just relax, like just smile, have fun. Like we're out here for fun. And I just was like, oh yeah, like we are in Portugal. Like this is supposed to be fun. So I'm glad that was your message. Cause
very much so.
True. Yeah.
I think runners take themselves far too seriously sometimes.
Yeah.
Relax and enjoy.
Oh yeah. All right. Okay. One person to follow on social media and why?
Well, you've said one of them. I think Steve Magnus. Says a lot of very clever things, kind of puts it in a very easy to understand way. I've always thought or hoped I'd do the same thing.
You did, definitely do.
But he does it, and you know, he's got a good following. So if you're going to follow someone, I think Steve Magnus is a good guy to follow.
Right,
if not, just follow Kipchoge and just look at the way he smiles all the time because it's great.
It's amazing. All right. How do you want to be remembered on this podcast?
I'd like to think I've given some tips for everyone, not just speedy runners. And I always say to people, look, are you a performance athlete? And people laugh when I'm talking to big rooms of people and they say, no, I'm not a performance athlete. And they apologize. And
I'm
a slow back
of the pack runner, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Or I'm running for the fun for the first time ever, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I say, okay, so who here in the room would like to be better tomorrow than they are today?
Mm.
And of course, everyone puts their hand up and I say, right, you're all performance athletes. Just stop trying to believe that you're not. So get out there and have a few goals, perform.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. Love that. All right. And finally, a running for real moment. So that's something that only runners will understand that the rest of the population wouldn't.
You've caught me out completely here.
So something like where you have 5 minutes to go of your run, but you really need the toilet. So you have to run in and then you go back out for another 5 minutes because you want to finish on the zero or something like that. Like something that only runners do.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I've hosted these training camps in the Algarve for many years and quite often in March, they're marathon sort of camps or more people are doing the marathon on them. And I say to people every year, you know, we go out for the long run. We start at about 7:30 and breakfast at the hotel finishes at 10 or 10:30. So there's 3 hours here to do your long run. And I always say to people, you don't need to run for longer than 3 hours anyway, in my opinion. That's something I believe in to a point. And, you know, breakfast will be served, so come back. And runners, some of these guys, they come bursting in through the door at 2:59 and they will start trying to negotiate in a frenzied, rabid way with the staff to get extra breakfast or to try and get the staff to stay on for an extra 20 minutes because they've got to do 3 hours, 20 minutes. And they just completely lose the plot. And I always say to guys, look, you know, 3 hours is good enough for your longest run. And when we're on that camp, why are you trying to negotiate with people and change everything here on that run? So don't be one of those Fruit Loops that is a slave sort of to your training plan or this weird thing that more is going to be better for you in one run. Don't leave your marathon in the longest run.
Yes.
And probably 3 hours or just over is as far as you ever need to go.
Great advice to finish off there. All right, Nick, where can people find out more about you, learn about running with us, and just everything else?
Yeah, so runningwithus.com, at Nick Anderson Run, and it's Running With Us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. But, you know, if you ever want to get in touch, we'll always answer questions. And if you enjoy your running in the UK, then do look up what we're doing here in the UK. But I know you've got a following everywhere, Tina. So keep up the good work. I'm very proud of you.
Oh, lovely. Thank you, Nick. That's so nice to hear. And thanks so much for joining us today.
Pleasure.
My friends, if you have a minute and you could leave a review on your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Spotify, or whatever else podcast player you use to listen to this podcast, or if you would subscribe to this podcast, you will help me get out in front of new runners to make our tribe even bigger and even better. It might not seem like you as one person can make a difference, but really it helps a lot. And it shows me you appreciate the hard work I put in for those. Thank you so much. Well, what did you think? Was that information packed? I thought that episode would be helpful this time of year with spring marathons just a few months away. And I hope you took a lot from it. I had a lot of other things I wanted to ask Nick about. So if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to take a screenshot, share it on your Facebook or Instagram, or you can email me to let me know you enjoyed it. And I will try my best to bring Nick back on. I say try my best. He's a friend, so I'm sure I can get him back on. But he is a hard man to pin down as he is just doing so much, in case that wasn't obvious. Just a reminder, my Overcoming Amenorrhea book is out in the world. So if you're trying to get your period back, this contains everything I did and all the things I recommend trying to give yourself the best chance. Not having a period is not okay. And I ignored it for years, but now I look back, I see I could have achieved a lot more in that time had I known what to do to eat right. I think you'll find it very helpful. And even if you're not working through it, but you struggle with body image, this has a lot in that for you too. And a lot of men have read it and enjoyed it, as have other women who have not struggled with amenorrhea. So you can get yourself a copy by searching my name on Amazon, Tina Muir. I know amenorrhea is not the easiest word to spell, so that's probably the best way to go find it. Or you can go to tinamuir.com/book. For those who have already read the book, if you enjoy it, would you do me a huge favor and leave me an Amazon rating and review? That would mean so much to me and is really helpful. We all know we live in this world where reviews are very important. So if you've enjoyed it, that will help show other people as well. There are links to everything we talked about today, in addition to those in the show notes at tinamuir.com/episode101. Now, next week, I have Christy Eschwanden on the show to talk about her book. And it is a really interesting one, talking all about recovery. So you are going to learn a lot. So be sure to hit the subscribe button and I will see you next Friday. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Running For Real podcast. Be sure to check out tinamuir.com for show notes and even more helpful running information.